Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of Trib Tower. Here till 5 o'clock this morning. We're about to do the midnight movie reviews with Colin, and I believe Eric is calling in right now, and we'll get Eric on as well. And midnight movie reviews starting a little bit late tonight because the Cubs game went late. We're here till 5. This is the second-to-last Friday night show for me. Because I am moving to weeknights, I will be your overnight host every Monday through Friday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. and hanging out with Cochran on his show for a little while every morning, and also retaining my Saturday night show from 8 to 12. So all of the regular features from Friday night are going to be shifted over to Saturday night, as well as so many of our regular guests and contributors to our weekend shows. We're going to take all the weekend shows and the vibes of Friday and Saturday night that we've established over the years, and we're going to kind of combine them into our great Saturday night show from 8 p.m. to midnight, and then you can hear me every single weeknight on the overnights here. And I could not be more thrilled. It was just announced today. It was finalized, and we're ready to go. All the changes at WGN will start on September 3rd, a big day, and it's going to be awesome. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking movies. If you got a question about movies or a comment or anything like that, we'll take your calls. And if you want to send a text, it's to 24720. You can follow us on Facebook, too. All right, let's make it official. It's time for the Midnight Movie Reviews. Nick DiGilio here. All right, on The Voice of Chicago. And yes, it is time for the Midnight Movie Reviews. If you have comments or questions, if you saw any of the new movies that are out and you want to contribute, it's 312-981-7200. We jump into the Midnight Movie Reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter, we're all members of the Chicago Film Critic Association. Eric and Colin write for the efilmcritic.com website, and we review all the new movies and all of the on-demand movies, the movies that are in the theaters, and the list of movies that are available in your house on demand. You can watch them anytime you want at your leisure, bro. Let's welcome Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
All right, guys. Saturday night, okay with you guys?
Works for me.
Yeah, Colin?
Yeah. The first Saturday is going to be tricky, but I think we can manage it.
The first Saturday will be the 7th.
Yeah, yeah. Can't do it, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
Unless it's like 10:30, 11 o'clock.
It'll more than likely be around, you know, we haven't really decided yet.
Okay.
But it will probably be close to midnight. So we're probably going to do, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's going to be 10:30 every week.
Okay, that I like.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's
definitely doable.
So 10 o'clock, we will do Drunks in the News straight out of context and Nick D Show Spies and stuff. 10:30, we'll do the Midnight Movie Reviews and take that to midnight.
That's awesome.
All right, sound good?
And congratulations.
Thank you, man.
This is crazy nuts.
I could not be more thrilled. Let me tell you something, man. You know, I've been at this station for a really long time, and this is a real, real thrill for me to have this gig. And I, you know, I'm a late night guy, and it's perfect. It's a great 3-hour show every night. I'm going to lead in and hang out with Steve Cochran on the morning show every day, and I get to keep my weekend show. It's a dream. It's amazing. And you know, this has been an incredible day because I did that, and then I saw The World's End, which we'll get to later.
yeah.
All right. Let's start with the on-demand features, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The first one is a film called Ain't Them Bodies Saints with Rooney Mara, Casey Affleck, and Ben Foster. Now, I have not seen this. I know it's available on-demand, but I have seen the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the impression that I get. Now, Colin, you haven't seen it, but Eric, you have, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've seen the trailer, too.
All right. The trailer seems to me like somebody watched a couple of Terrence Malick movies
mm-hmm.
and decided that they were going to do that.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me. Now, what's the deal with the movie itself?
Well, the movie is like a director who watched a couple Terrence Malick films and decided he was going to make his own.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, then, truth in advertising.
Yes. And which, to someone like myself, could spell slow death.
Yes.
Because
you can't. You don't like the real Terrence Malick. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And yet, I kind of like this movie.
Oh, okay.
the writer-director of the film is David Lowery, who has normally done a lot of cinematography, and it certainly shows in this movie because this film really just kind of has a really kind of gorgeous look to it. I imagine even more so on the big screen. I actually saw it at home. But the film opens and says it takes place almost kind of like a once upon a time kind of feel in Texas. The time period is not exactly fully established, but it stars Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara as this sort of young couple who get involved in crime at a young age, and during one of their efforts, things go bad. They get captured by the cops. Rooney Mara is acquitted, but Casey Affleck's character Bob Muldoon is sent away. The movie picks up some years down the road where Rooney Mara has had their child. And as they're sort of living and putting their life together, Casey's character escapes from prison. And the movie is sort of about his attempt to journey home, is evading the cops and trying to at least get back to see his woman and his baby. Before he can sort of disappear. Ben Foster plays one of the cops who was actually involved in that infamous day, and now sort of takes a shine to Rooney Mara's character. Keith Carradine plays Skerritt, not Tom Skerritt, but plays a guy that sort of their guardian and may have actually been sort of indirectly responsible for their life of crime. Or maybe directly responsible. Yeah, the movie does, you know, have that sort of that leisurely Terrence Malick pace. And every once in a while they're reading letters to one another, and it certainly has that Malick voiceover thing. And the film occasionally is a little too in love with its own minimalism. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But there's always sort of something interesting going on in the film, whether it's the technical aspects or the performances, which are all really solid. The film's only about an hour and a half long, so it doesn't it's about the right length for a Malick copycat. Certainly not a great film by any stretch. I know there's some people really sort of jumping on that Malick train, if you will. But it's a pretty decent effort, and I suspect probably some people will like it even more than I did.
Okay. Ain't Them Body Saints, available on demand. Now let's talk a little bit about The Colony. Which I like two of the guys in it a
mm-hmm.
lot. I'm not sure what to make of this, though. It's an action sci-fi thriller. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, we're talking Lawrence Fishburne and Bill Paxton, who are both we like a lot. It's nice to see Bill Paxton doing films again.
Yeah.
I don't know how much about this film. I haven't seen it, but the story is a bunch of people at the colony. It's forced underground by the next ice age. A struggling outpost of survivors must fight to preserve humanity against a threat even more savage than nature.
Mm.
So I guess it's, kind of a post-apocalyptic The Thing, only without all the interesting stuff.
Right. So The Colony, and it is opening in theaters on September 20th. Lawrence Fishburne, Bill Paxton, sci-fi movie about fighting during the Ice Age.
Yeah.
All right. Next is Dark Tourist.
Dark Tourist, another film with some interesting cast people. Melanie Griffith, Pruitt Taylor, Vince, Michael Cudlitz from Southland. And this one is a psychological thriller in the haunting tradition of films like Taxi Driver and Monster. The grief tourist takes us into the chilling labyrinth of a man's dark hobby and his even darker mind.
Mm.
Okay, so yeah, that does kind of sound like Taxi Driver a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
It was actually written by the actor Frank John Hughes, who is part of Band of Brothers. He was in The Departed. Actor you might recognize if you saw his face, but he actually is the writer on
okay.
this one.
All right. And by the way, it is playing at Facets as well.
That's correct.
It's at Facets, and it's available on demand. Dark Tourist. Okay,
mm-hmm.
There's that. All right, now the next one I'm really...
Of course you are.
I am gonna order this damn movie. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Devil's Pass.
Yeah. Well, tell them why you want to see this movie.
Because it's directed by my man Rennie Harlan. That's why.
Right. Was apparently doing very nothing but on-demand films.
Yeah, that was inevitable. That was inevitable.
Yeah, he's on that path.
It's really funny that, you know, like, here's Rennie Harlan doing these, like, you know, straight-to-DVD movies, who I love the Rennie Harlan.
Mm-hmm.
Rennie Harlan is doing straight-to-DVD stuff, and Andrew Dice Clay is in a critically acclaimed Woody Allen movie. So there you go.
Yeah, Blue Jasmine opening wide this weekend, actually.
Which is definitely, I got to tell you, it's worth seeing. It's worth seeing. I think the performances are great. I think Cate Blanchett's a shoe-in for Best Actress nomination.
I think that's your first sort of,
And I think Sally Hawkins is really, really close to getting the Supporting Actress nomination. I think she's a strong contender, too. Actually, all the performances in the movie are just terrific.
Yeah.
But it's my favorite Woody Allen movie since Match Point. So,
there you go.
Yeah. All right, that opens wide. If you want to see the new Woody Allen movie, you're stunned that I actually like it.
Do you actually like more Rennie Harlan movies than Woody Allen movies?
Oh, yeah, without question.
That's frightening.
I'll take Mindhunters over half of his over half of Woody Allen's catalog.
Let that sink in, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, what do we know about Devil's Pass?
What we know about the Devil's Pass is that it's in the found footage tradition, kind of. It's five young filmmakers retrace the steps of a doomed group of hikers in pursuit of an unsolvable mystery.
Yeah! With a cast of people I never heard of, but my man Rennie Harlan is directing it. So
that's right. That's all Nick needs.
That's right. I'll be spending. Yeah.
How come the poster looks like a trashy romance novel?
It does, doesn't it? It looks like.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's a very weird. The whole thing is weird. But Rennie Harlan directed it, so I don't care. All right, you guys, hang on.
Okay.
Colin and Eric are with me. It's the Midnight Movie Reviews. We started a little bit late, and the Midnight Movie Reviews are going to turn into the Saturday Night Movie Reviews in 2 weeks, okay? So Eric and Colin are with me, and the Midnight Movie Reviews 2 weeks from tomorrow will be now known as the Saturday Night Movie Reviews with the changes that are happening. So there you go. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. It is the Midnight Movie Reviews. Getting off to a late start because of a late Cub game. And Eric and Colin are here, and we will be moving the Midnight Movie Reviews to Saturdays in 2 weeks once I start my full-time gig being your overnight guy right here on WGN Monday through Friday, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. And I'm going to keep my Saturday evening show from 8 to midnight. So we're going to move the movie reviews to Saturday nights. Starting at around 10:30. This is Colin and Eric back. Hi, guys.
Hello.
All right. We are talking about the movies that are available on demand. The ones that you haven't seen, Eric, we'll just fly through those real quick. Let's talk about this. What is this? Is it IP Man or Ip Man?
I think it's referred to as Ip Man.
Ip Man, The Final Fight. This is a martial arts movie.
Yeah, and there have been a few of these Ip Man films, a few of them that aren't even not even connected to one another, but this one... post-war Hong Kong legendary Wing Chun Grandmaster Ip Man is reluctantly called into action once more.
All right, so it's a series of martial arts movies, and if you like the big martial arts movies, apparently, evidently, this is a pretty popular character because they've made a bunch of movies.
Yeah, and the next week, the new Wong Kar-wai film, The Grandmaster, is about
Hitman as well.
Yeah, and I understand that that has been massively recut from the Asian version.
Massively.
Yeah, that's
recut.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
All right, Jane Mansfield's Car. This is Billy Bob Thornton's new movie.
Yeah, this is it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival last year to not a lot of really great acclaim, unfortunately. It was a film that I kind of stayed away from because I was hearing a lot of negative things about it. But
yeah.
It's set in 1969 Alabama. The death of a Klan's estranged wife and mother brings together two very different families. Do the scars of the past hide differences that will tear them apart or expose truths that could lead to unexpected collisions? Wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what a cast. I mean, Kevin Bacon, Robert Duvall, Robert Patrick, Billy Bob Thornton, your favorite, Shawnee Smith.
Yeah, love her.
In it, Frances O'Connor. Really, really strong cast. I heard just a lot of indifference to it last year.
Yeah. Okay, that's Jane Mansfield's Car. Spark, a Burning Man story. What in hell?
It's a documentary about Burning Man.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. All right, so let's move on to the other ones that you've seen. I'm just depressed by this Frozen Ground.
I
look at it. It's this movie called The Frozen Ground, and what the hell's going on with John Cusack?
I don't know. Maybe you can have him on your show and ask him.
I don't know what the hell. I haven't seen the movie, but he's an enormously talented guy.
Yeah.
You know, one of the most likable and talented actors, you know, around, and
mm-hmm.
he's just doing these really crappy straight-to-video things now. And again, I haven't seen this one. You have. You can tell us whether it's crappy or not. And it's with Nicolas Cage, their first movie together since Con Air.
Yes. Yes, it's the reunion of Con Air, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go.
And this one is a story about the Alaskan state trooper played by Nicolas Cage, sort of teams up with this junkie stripper played by Vanessa Hudgens, who is part of a group of women who may or may not have been kidnapped and possibly hunted by this serial killer named Robert Hansen, played by Cusack. The film's actually based on a true story, something that I may have neglected to realize at the beginning of the movie, and you find out, or at least you find out a lot more about it at the end of the movie. So the film, you know, it's more police procedural than sort of a, you know, any kind of like, you know, torture type of movie.
Yeah.
Although you do get to, you know, you do know whether the Cusack character is involved or not, pretty early on. He's a sort of this normal guy. The film really would like to be sort of Insomnia.
Yeah.
You know, just without the insomnia part.
Right.
And all the interesting parts of that movie.
Yeah.
So, the last, 45 minutes of the movie, there's a lot of, Cusack in the being questioned by Nicolas Cage and his people. And then Vanessa Hudgens, her flashbacks to her story and whatnot. It's not as bad as some of the, the Cusack straight-to-video stuff or some of the Cage straight-to-video stuff that we've been seeing as of late. But this is more in that, a couple weeks ago we had that De Niro-Travolta movie.
Yeah.
It's in that sort of realm.
Yeah, that's what it seems like just from reading about it and looking at the artwork.
Yeah.
Well, Cage, Cusack, Frozen Ground, not
and 50 Cent.
And 50 Cent.
Sorry, 50 Cent played a pimp.
That's right. Fitty.
Fitty Clayton Johnson.
50 Cent is in the movie.
50 Cent plays Vanessa Hudgens' pimp.
Okay, that's not
in the movie.
Yeah, that's not stereotypical. All right.
No.
All right, everybody, hang on. Colin and Eric are here, and we are going through the movies. We got just two more on-demand movies. These are movies that you can watch in your house, order them. Many of them are not even in theaters yet. Some of them are same day as theaters, but you can watch them at home on your on-demand. Sometimes there are great, great offers for these movies, and sometimes there's not so much. Two more on-demand movies, and then we will get to all the brand-new movies that were released in theater this weekend. 312-981-7200, the Midnight Movie Reviews will continue. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. Midnight Movie Reviews got an hour late start tonight because of the Cubs game. So we are going to be reviewing a couple more on-demand movies, and then we'll jump to the stuff that you can see in theaters. Questions or comments about movies, 312-981-7200. Colin and Eric are here. Colin and Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. Eric, tell us about another on-demand movie that you can watch in your home called Sparrow's Dance.
Okay. Sparrow's Dance involves an agoraphobic young woman played by Marin Ireland, someone who does not leave her apartment for her own psychological reasons. One day she has an overflowing toilet, so she calls a plumber. And the plumber comes over, and he's played by Paul Sparks, who with his beard draws a remarkable comparison to Ryan Dempster, actually. The first time I'm like, hey, Ryan Dempster's got isn't acting. Okay. And he actually has kind of the quirk of Ryan Dempster, if you're familiar with the former Cubs pitcher.
Did he throw? Did the plumber throw a wrench at A-Rod?
No, he didn't.
Oh, okay.
No, he didn't.
Right.
He does not have a Harry Carey impression either.
Right.
But he comes over and he's very sort of quirky and charming and tries to open up this young woman. And eventually she agrees to sort of go out on a date with him. Well, not out, but at least comes over to her apartment for dinner.
Yeah.
And they strike up a really beautiful friendship that eventually leads to romance. This was a nice little surprise that I think people should check out. I was worried that it was just going to be another film about a woman. we see a lot of these types of movies where you pick a disease and then, you throw some romance into it, and then they're good for a while, and then things fall apart. But no, this is definitely a comedy as much of a drama. Paul Sparks is really really funny as the plumber. Mirren Island doesn't overplay her hand as the woman, and there are a couple things that kind of repeats itself, but the movie's only like 80 minutes long. So again, you're in, you're out, and you got a nice little relationship movie here. So I think people should check this one out.
That sounds like a neat concept. I mean, this is something that you could probably do on stage.
Oh yeah, and at one point there's even sort of a shot that even sort of suggests the idea. It could be on a stage.
Yeah,
actually. So
cool.
Yeah,
that sounds cool. When was the last time we saw a woman who was agoraphobic?
Agoraphobic.
Was it Sigourney Weaver in Copycat? Was that
the first thing that I thought of?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I also thought of Elliot Gould in Inside Out.
Oh,
Yeah.
I loved Copycat.
I liked Copycat, too.
That was John Emile, right?
Yes.
That was a damn good movie. All right. all right, so that's Sparrow's Dance. All right, now tell us about A Teacher. I read the synopsis of this movie. How many movies are we going to see with older women fooling around with younger boys this year?
Not enough.
I mean, but there's been like, hasn't there been like three or four of them already?
Have there? Why am I drawing a blank?
Well,
on
isn't
that?
Okay? Isn't the one with Veronica Mars? Isn't that one of them?
Lifeguard, yes.
Okay, and then there was another one. Maybe it was something you covered at a film festival.
Yeah, maybe because I think of Veronica Mars still as Veronica Mars, Kristen Bell, that just the age difference
didn't
seem, even though it's clearly in that movie, it's done. It's
and what about, what the one were you talking about, Craig? Nicole Kidman, what movie?
Not Birth.
Nicole Kidman and the dude from High School, who's the dude from High School Musical? Craig is talking
about. Oh, Paperboy.
Paperboy? That's the one, yeah.
Oh, with Zac Efron.
Yeah,
Zac Efron was in High School Musical.
Yeah, okay.
he was of age though.
Yeah, in Paperboy, he's of age.
Yeah,
yeah. I just saw a trailer where he's the doctor who tries to save John Kennedy. Yeah, what is that?
I don't know. It looks like another it's another film that sort of takes all the different points of views of all the people that were there. Giamatti plays Zapruder.
Plays Zapruder, yeah.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on?
Yeah, it's playing the Toronto Film Festival next month.
And Hanks produced it, right?
Hanks and Paxton produced it. Yeah, it's a Playtone production.
It's a Playtone production. Wow. All right. All right. Well, let's. So Sparrow's Dance. Enjoyed it. Now we're on to A Teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, we're on to A Teacher, and as we hinted at, this is a story of a high school teacher who has an affair with one of her students. And that's about all you need to know about this movie, because that's pretty much all it is. It's a subject matter that I'm sort of fascinated with in a way, this film is not really fascinating at all. It's a film that does, I wouldn't call it a Malikian approach to it, but it's a film that, you know, that doesn't need to be baked in so much silence and, you know, almost incoherence sometimes. It doesn't really get down to, what either of these characters are really thinking. The drama of the film is very inert, this is not really very engaging or interesting at all. Actually, so I would recommend this
even
one.
Even though it's a provocative story, not very interesting at all.
Right, exactly.
All righty then. Okay, well, let's move on, shall we? I would love, Colin, to enlighten both of us on The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones. Now, have you guys seen some of the commercials that they were doing this past week? At the mall and stuff.
Yes,
that was just. I was like, I'm going to put my foot through the TV right now.
Mm-hmm.
Just drove me nuts. Now, and this is yet another movie. This is Colin. This is based on a young adult bestseller, supernatural nonsense.
Yes, a series of them. A quadrilogy, maybe. I don't know. Yes, another average teenager, in this case a girl with a few friends who is into poetry, who suddenly finds that she is a descendant of a long line of shadow hunters who exist in an alternate reality from our own. Only she can see them. Only certain people can see them, and, you know. The beginning when after, like, some bad guys and a giant demon dog invade her house and kidnap her mother. She gets paid a visit. By the way, her parents are also shadow hunters. They're in on this. She gets paid a visit by, you know, a good-looking blonde boy who informs her of her heritage and her abilities. And there's a reason that she keeps seeing the same rune symbol everywhere she goes and draws it obsessively, much like, you know, Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters with Devil's Tower, that type of thing. Anyway, the plot consists of portals to another world, you know, giant castles in New York that have a cheap-looking facade to normal people. You got some vampires and lurking around, and a subplot about the girl's best friend who, you know, is a boy who likes her more than as a friend. But, of course, there's this sexual tension between her and the blonde hunk, you know, who's showing her around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is about as derivative as you can get. But it's not completely unwatchable or incompetent either. It does actually have a few action scenes worth watching, and the cast isn't too bad. There's even actually a lot more gore in this movie than I expected from a PG-13 young adult fantasy movie. Once we see the first demon dog, it's actually kind of pretty disgusting and kind of made me go, oh, okay, maybe this will be something better than I was expecting, but not really. It's just too familiar to be interesting, especially in its third act when it reveals a plot twist that is just too reminiscent of another plot twist in, you know, one of the most popular intergalactic original trilogies of all time. the audience I sat with was not buying it, preview audience. They were not buying it, neither was I. Definitely, I do not recommend this movie. Okay. So,
The Mortal Mortal Instruments, City of Bones.
Yeah, or Sea of Monsters, whatever you want to call it. Percy Jackson, City of Bones, whatever,
I'm looking at this director's track record. Good Lord. The Karate Kid remake with that little bastard Will Smith's kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Pink Panther 2.
Wow.
Agent Cody Banks. And One Night at McCool's.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
And soon, Mortal Instruments 2.
Right. He's already on his resume.
Yep.
Wow. Oh, man. That guy needs a slap. Okay.
Wait a minute. You glossed over Long Flat Balls 1 and 2.
Well, yeah.
whatever those are.
Though, that's because it's. I think it's Norwegian because he's like a Norwegian dude, and I think those films go back to Norway.
Nothing wrong with this Norwegian.
Sorry, gotta say it. Every time I hear an ad for Norwegia,
yeah. See, so you really want to save these Swedes, Norwegian, whatever. all right, hang on. Colin and Eric are here. We're reviewing the movies. If you would like to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. It's the Midnight Movie Reviews. We got a late start, and 2 weeks from tomorrow, the Midnight Movie Reviews will be moving to Saturday night, and they will be called the Saturday Night Movie Reviews. Colin and Eric are going to move with me over. This is my second-to-last Friday night show. I am moving full-time to overnights, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Monday morning through Friday morning, and then I have my Saturday evening show. It will continue from 8 to midnight, and so we're going to take all the stuff from Friday and all the stuff from Saturday that we've been doing and kind of combine it so we can keep that feel of all these great weekend shows that we've been doing, and then we'll create something new and fun to keep you company all night long from 2 to 5 on the weeknights. Real thrilled, full-time, happy as hell. And also, I'm a lead-in for Steve Cochran, and I get to hang out with him for a while on his show right at the beginning of his show after 5 o'clock every morning. So it's going to be a blast. So anyway, Midnight Movie Reviews will continue on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Normally, we are doing Drunks in the News at around this time, sponsored by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. And I thank George and everybody at Gale Street for being so awesome. Go to the Gale Street Inn and Jeff Park. Tell them Nick sent you. I guarantee a great meal. Great staff. George makes you feel like you're at home. It's an awesome place. Go there all the time. Fantastic. Gale Street Inn. We thank them for sponsoring Drunks in the News. Normally, at this time, we do it. We're going to be doing it a little bit later on tonight, along with the other regular features, Straight Out of Context and the Nick D Show Spies. That's all coming up. Right now, though, we are doing the Midnight Movie Reviews. Colin and Eric are here, and here we go. All right, Eric, why don't you remind everyone about Drinking Buddies, which is now it's available on demand, but it's also playing at the Landmark Century Center Cinema. Colin, have you seen this or no?
Not yet. I plan to this weekend.
Okay. Eric, tell us about Drinking Buddies again.
Okay. This is a new film from local Chicago and filmmaker Joe Swanberg.
He's got a good – this is a strong weekend for him.
It really is.
Yeah.
This is a story that premiered earlier this year at the South by Southwest Film Festival. It's the story of Olivia Wilde, plays sort of the marketing manager at a local Chicago brewery, and Jake Johnson from New Girl, another Chicagoan, plays a guy who works at the brewery. And they have a really good friendship. They're really good work friends. Like the title says, they're drinking buddies. They hang out. They eat lunch together. They hang out after work. Each of them have sort of a significant other. Jake Johnson is with Anna Kendrick, and Olivia Wilde is with Ron Livingston. The Wilde-Livingston relationship is not the strongest of sort. Wilde sort of always has her mind on work. Livingston as well. Johnson and Kendrick are a little more stable. When the two couples decide to go away for the weekend, the cabin, some things occur that further unstrengthen the relationships. And the movie, you know, really is not about these plot twists. It's not really sort of about these stories of, like, you know, these people are with the wrong people and clearly they're right for each other. But it really more takes place in sort of the real world where, you know, you have these situations where, you know, clearly these people, you know, kind of should be together, but it's just sort of like wrong time, wrong place, you know, situations for them to really sort of live happily ever after. And the film, you know, it deals with the joys of that kind of friendship, and also, you know, the pain and the heartbreak of that kind of stuff. This is really, really strong work from Swanberg. It's obviously the sort of the biggest cast he's ever worked with. Olivia Wilde has never been better. She has never been better than she is in this. Jake Johnson, who we all love on New Girl, also shows that he can be a tremendous dramatic actor. Everyone is good in this movie, but, you know, Wilde and Johnson particularly shine. You know, if you can get out to the theaters and see this, absolutely go see it and support a local. But, you know, if you can't, see it at home and buy it and support a local, because this is really one of the strongest films of the year.
I thought it was terrific, man. I really did. And it's one of two movies about people drinking this week. and both of them, you know, are very, very strong. I think Olivia Wilde's a revelation in this movie, because I've never liked her, you know. I like to look at her.
Sure.
But I never thought she was very good. This is just a really well-written movie. I think it's by far the best thing that Swanberg has ever done as a filmmaker and as a writer. No question about it.
Yeah.
And I think it's terrific. And they shot a lot of it here. And it was they used Revolution Brewery in Logan Square.
Yep. They shot it there.
And just really great stuff. And I'm reading some stories now online about how Anna Kendrick said she was drunk during half the shoot.
I don't remember her drinking that much in the movie,
evidently,
though.
She was drinking when they were at Revolution. She was like, beer is so good. She was like getting hammered.
She's awesome.
And she weighs like 80 pounds. So, of course, you know, she's going to be drunk in 15 minutes. So.
Half a beer.
Absolutely. Thing. But, no, this is really beautifully written. Great characters. You really care about them. What I like most about it, it's about flawed people. And I like that. And it's really well acted. And I got to say, you know, Jake Johnson is the king.
Yeah.
he is just the king. I love Jake Johnson. And if you don't know who he is, he's a regular on New Girl. He plays Nick on New Girl. Nick Miller on New Girl. And, you know, sort of the Sam and Diane love interest thing, you know, that's going on between him and Jess on the show. But anyway, he's great in this, and he's terrific. Everybody in it is really good. And again, local. Swanberg is from Chicago. Wrote, directed it, and it's a terrific movie. Real low budget, but really well done. I think it's terrific. It's available on demand. That's how I saw it. You can watch it on demand, or you can go to the Landmark Century Center Cinema and see it. Either way, you got a winner on your hands. This is a really terrific film, and I agree with you 100%, Eric. I was so glad to have watched
Great.
It. Yeah, it's really, really terrific stuff. And again, man, a strong week for both
Ty. Swanberg and drinking.
And Ty West.
Yeah, right.
Seriously. It's a strong week for Ty West, and he didn't direct anything.
Right.
So
so that's a win for us. Come on.
All right.
Who said that?
All right. Okay, let me see. What do we got here next? Here's what we got next. We're going to take a quick break. And a little bit later on. Actually, you know what, Eric? Why don't you tell us about the Black Harvest films that are happening this weekend at the Siskel Center?
Shout out to our friend Sergio Mims.
Yeah.
He's been putting on the Black Harvest Festival. He's always at the Gene Siskel Film Center every August. He's been doing this for about a decade now. I don't know how he does it, honestly. But it's an entire month film festival dedicated to black cinema. And there are a couple
of
films.
You guys did 2 days and almost died.
Exactly. he does this every year, and there are a couple films that are playing this weekend and this week actually that are worth checking out. One is called Home, and it's a story of a guy in sort of a mental health facility who is kind of right on the verge of getting out. He wants to get out. He wants to sort of reestablish his life on the outside and get an apartment so he can hang with his young son and whatnot. And it's kind of a cuckoo's nest appeal to it, with, you know, he's sort of the de facto sort of leader in a way of the characters, and it's again a movie about very flawed people, very strong performances in the movie, very reminiscent of a film that we'll be talking about in a few weeks called Short Term 12. That's actually really terrific too. Okay. But that's a film that is playing this Sunday at 5:15 at the Gene Siskel Film Center. So that one's definitely worth checking out. And this other one called Destination Planet Negro. And this is a film written and directed by Kevin Willmott, who was responsible for a movie many years ago called CSA, The Confederate States of America.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a film about, you know, what if, you know, the South actually won the Civil War, where African-Americans would be these days. That's definitely worth finding on video.
I love that movie.
Yeah, that's really, really funny. Really funny stuff. This one is a little spottier in ways, but the movie takes on sort of the reminiscence of old science fiction movies. So the movie sort of starts in 1939 as sort of the black patriarchs of society are trying to figure out how to solve the racism problem.
Yeah.
And they decide that the only thing you have left is for them to go to another planet. So they build a rocket ship, and they get a couple representatives to take off and to establish residency on Mars.
Okay.
And needless to say, things don't go exactly as planned, and I don't really want to spoil sort of the twist of where things go from there. But the movie it is reminiscent of a lot of classic science fiction movies, but done with that same sort of, you know, the twist on racism and whatnot is actually very clever. So that one, it played tonight, but it's going to be playing again on Tuesday the 27th at 8:30 p.m. So
that's called
check that one out.
Destination Planet Negro, part of Black Harvest Film Festival at the Gene Siskel Center right here in Chicago. All right, guys, hang on. We got more movies to review coming up, and your questions and comments are always welcome. It's 312-981-7200. You can send your texts to 24720. And you can also follow us at Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Midnight Movie Reviews continue with Colin and Eric. And again, call us with your questions or comments about movies. 312-981-7200. The news is coming up next. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. The Midnight Movie Reviews continue. We got to a late start tonight. We started after 1 o'clock, late Cub game, so the Midnight Movie Reviews didn't start till 1. This is my second-to-last Friday night show. I am moving to full-time overnights Monday through Friday mornings from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. leading into and being a part of Steve Cochran's show. And I'm keeping my Saturday evening show from 8 to midnight. So all the Friday night features, including the Midnight Movie Reviews, will be moving to Saturday night. Colin and Eric are here. We got some other movies to talk about right now. And Colin and Eric, welcome back.
Hello. Thank
you.
All right. Colin, why don't you tell us about Austin Land?
All right. Let's start with Carrie Russell as a woman completely obsessed with Jane Austen. Her apartment is drenched in all things Austen, including a life-size standee of Mr. Darcy, which I'm pretty sure is every Anglophile's favorite literary character and sort of the ideal man, at least the few that I've met. Anyway, she has saved up all her money to embark on an adventure to Austen Land, a place where you can live like a character in a Jane Austen novel. You can dress in, you know, the period clothing and, you know, live in a house with a bunch of other Austen-like characters, including a Mr. Darcy type. And she ends up having a tag-along played by Jennifer Coolidge, who knows next to nothing about Jane Austen, but who has booked herself in the most expensive suite there anyway. And Russell's character has had to settle for, like, a mid-level room. She doesn't quite get the most fulfilling fantasy in Austen Land because she can't quite afford it. So she's treated kind of like, you know, a mid-level, I don't know, peasant or whatever. But she finds herself in a bit of a romantic triangle anyway when she breaks character and starts, you know, flirting with the stable boy, who she doesn't realize at first that he's an actor playing a part just like everybody else. And there's a sort of romantic triangle between that and the Mr. Darcy type in this film. So this is a movie about a fan having her dream come true, but who has no reaction to anything around her except mild indifference or contempt. It's a movie that has no idea what fandom is. It's a movie that has no idea what anything is. It could have been a very interesting movie about a fan who goes through a period of sort of, you know, disillusionment and, you know, what this moment means to her in terms of, you know, not just being a fan, but being a human being and being misguided, you know, but the film has no trace
of intelligence on the matter. Everything just turns on a dime. Everything happens because the plot demands it. Every time this movie made a plot, I mean, the script demands it. Every time this movie makes a plot turn, I just wanted to smack my forehead. It doesn't even know what its own world is about. One of the rules of Austin Land is they can't have any electronics. They have to be, you know, as pure and authentic as possible. Yet Jennifer Coolidge can have a widescreen TV in her room and nobody makes mention of it. It has no idea what romance is. The romantic arc in this film is the most unconvincing I've seen in a long, long time. Partly because, I mean, there are no characters here worth rooting for. And because there are no actual characters in this movie. The movie doesn't stand for anything. And poor Carrie Russell, you know, her charm and her personality and her smile can usually go a long way towards making a, you know, mediocre or bad movie a little more pleasant and less of a chore to sit through, but not here. She's just squandering her talent in one of the worst, most incompetent movies of the year. I hated this movie, and I think Jane Austen fans will hate it too, because it just makes them look like, you know, clueless buffoons.
Wow.
So. Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
Yeah, not tonight.
There you go.
all right, and I didn't see this, so I didn't get a chance to see this. But Eric,
ignorance is bliss.
I don't know what I can add to that, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, you reviewed this. Where did you see this?
I saw it at Sundance this year.
Okay, and you broke my heart with your review, because you know how much I love Carrie Russell.
Yeah, I mean, everything Colin said about this movie is absolutely right. You know, just listening to his review, and you know, I'm just thinking, like, you know, I want to see Colin's version of this movie, because at least he has a point of view about it. This movie is horrible. Co-written and directed by Jerusha Hess, who is one half of the collaborative team that broke through with Napoleon Dynamite. I know you guys are not a fan of that movie, but I certainly was. But then Nacho Libre, and then the all very much unwatchable Gentlemen Broncos. This is probably even worse than that movie.
I hated Gentlemen Broncos.
Yeah.
With a passion. And I hated Napoleon Dynamite. Oddly, really like Nacho Libre.
Right.
I really, really like
it. That's not odd. You like wrestling.
Yeah, I just thought that movie was hilarious. But yeah, okay, yeah, but anyway, so go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a big fan of Napoleon Dynamite. I liked that, the weirdness and the structure of that movie. Which I compared to a live-action cartoon, but you know, this Austin Land doesn't even approach cartoon in a good or a bad way. It just kind of lies there with just no semblance of anything. It's nothing. And the reaction out of Sundance, I remember the reaction out of the press screen. We all just kind of walked out with this like a look on our faces, like, what the hell was that? This is absolutely a film to avoid at all costs.
Austin Land, not good.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
I know you do, baby. But speaking of Carrie Russell, I was just looking at her at her page there. You know she's in the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes?
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
She doesn't play one of the apes, does she?
And hey, man, come on.
No,
she's not.
Boysome? I don't know.
No.
Maybe. Okay.
She's not.
Relax.
Hey, she's playing. Let's see. What is her character's name? She doesn't have a name yet. But here's, you know who's directing it?
I knew this.
Matt Reeves.
That's right. Cloverfield.
Cloverfield and co-creator of Felicity, which explains why Carrie Russell is in it.
There you go.
But now what happened? Let me ask a question. What the hell, man? What happened to the guy who directed Rise? What's going on with that guy?
I don't know.
Come on.
Rupert Wyatt? Was that his name?
I can't remember what his name is. What's his name?
Rupert Wyatt?
I think
Rupert Wyatt.
What's going on?
He's got to have another gig or something, doesn't he?
He better.
I don't remember. He's
doing Star Trek 3.
He's doing Star Trek 3.
Doing 2016.
Come on.
In the meantime, he's also doing a couple TV series. One, Turn and Echo Chamber.
All right.
Okay, so, he's doing Star Wars, so he had to hand it off to somebody.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's fine. I just wish this
He worked wonders with the apes.
I want to see another movie from this guy.
Yeah.
Because Rise of the Planet of the Apes kicked all kinds of ass. And that's another one of those movies now. I watch it every single time it's on cable. And that, I'm telling you, that bridge sequence at the end is unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, all right, well, Austin Land, they didn't like it, Carrie.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
I know. So, anyway. All right, let's do this. Why don't we talk about Eric, why don't you tell us about Your Next?
Okay. This is a film that goes back a few film festivals that premiered at the 2011 Toronto Film Festival and is finally seeing the light of day in movie theaters, much to horror fans' delight that have been waiting 2 years for this thing. And it's a big cast. If you're familiar with all the cast of the movies like VHS, VHS 2, we mentioned Joe Swanberg and Ty West. A lot of actors and filmmaker actors in this thing if you're familiar with independent cinema. They're all getting together for this sort of reunion, family and friends, at a big country house, a big estate in the country. And as they're, trying to enjoy their evening, a group of attackers, laden in animal masks, begin shooting arrows through the house windows and picking off people one by one. The reason for their attack is unknown. Is it random? Is it pre-plotted? That's basically all you really want to know.
No, exactly. Let's not.
Yeah. That's all you need to know. Country house.
Right.
Bunch of people getting picked off by arrows.
This is definitely a movie that you don't want to give. You don't want to give too much away.
Yeah.
Because one of the joys of watching this movie is how it unfolds.
Absolutely.
Okay, Eric, tell me what you thought of it.
I like the movie. This is the kind of movie I'm not always the guy that's susceptible to big crowds and reactions and whatnot, but this is definitely the kind of horror film that you want to see with a big crowd, which I'm sure, Nick, you're going to talk about a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. because the reaction that you have during this movie, while being very bloody and gory, and you definitely get your quality kills in on this thing, it definitely has, a very cheeky sort of sensibility about it. Joe Swanberg in particular has a lot of fun with trying to avoid the carnage that's ensuing. It's a lot of the actors, everyone just sort of gets it in this movie. And, the way the thing is set up and the way the things unfold. The main character is played by Sharni Vinson from one of our favorite movies, Step Up 3D. that's right. She plays the wild card at the house. She plays the girlfriend of A.J. Bowen.
She rules in this movie.
She kind of does. Again, you don't want to spoil too much, she kind of kicks a little ass in this thing. The less you know, the better. I mean, all you really know, if you want to, have just sort of a good gory time, at the movie that, is a little more reminiscent of, Agatha Christie than say the sort of the pure horror of a movie like The Strangers or, The Purge. If everyone, all the people who dished out money to see that awful movie, The Purge, earlier this year, if you don't go out to see Your Next, shame on you. Yeah. You've done a disservice to horror everywhere, because The Purge was garbage. This is quality stuff.
Okay. Colin, what about you?
Well, I didn't have the experience that you guys had with watching it with a big crowd. I saw it this afternoon. There were not a lot of people in the theater. So, I sort of missed out on that experience of watching it. So, I like it. I'm not quite as bored or enthusiastic as you guys are. I kind of wish there was a little bit more of a build up to it, a little bit more to the first act, a little more reason to care about these people, even a little bit. But I just really kind of didn't. But once all hell breaks loose, it definitely, you know, goes up a notch anyway, because it's just very well made, and I like the style of it. I love the score for this thing. It sounds, you know, like an authentic sort of 70s, you know, late 70s, early 80s horror movie. It goes a long way towards, you know, establishing the mood of this thing, and it's pretty cool. Also, some great quality kills in it. That definitely helps. But, you know, once everything starts getting explained, I just kind of thought, really? That's the whole thing behind this? And I just thought, I kind of walked out thinking, that was a really well-made movie with kind of a dumb story. Hmm. So, you know, but as a well-made horror movie, I definitely recommend it. And I can see why watching this thing with a big crowd would be, you know, a lot more, you know, entertaining than the way I saw it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like this movie. I don't love it, but I like it.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best movies of the year. And once again, horror, baby. 2013 is a banner year for, I don't care if this movie's 2 years old. It came out in 2013, which has turned out to be a banner year for horror films. And I, you know, I was talking about how much I loved Jane Levy, who was phenomenal in Evil Dead remake. This Sharni Vinson, please. she is awesome in a different way. You know what I mean? It's a different kind of horror performance than what Jane Levy did in Evil Dead. But both, I think, two of the strongest female horror performances I've seen in years. I love this movie. Now, I will say this, and I should explain it. You guys already know this, but I saw this movie at the best possible situation. I mean, the ultimate way to see this film is how I saw it. I saw it at the Flashback Horror Convention, midnight on the Saturday night of the convention, with nothing but hardcore horror fans. The theater was packed. It was at the Movie Co., so it was a great theater, beautifully projected. People were very, very excited about it. Everybody got masks. We had lamb masks on and stuff, and there was a bar in the there was a cash bar at the bottom of the right at the entrance, and you know, you could feel the excitement because it was, you know, the premiere. Nobody had seen it. A couple of people have, because Steve Procopi was there and he had introduced it and everything, and he had already seen it. But it was a room full of people, a beautiful theater full of people, ready to have fun, having some cocktails, got their masks, and it was the ultimate way to see this movie, man. And I know it probably added a lot to how much I enjoyed it, but it was one of my favorite movie-going experiences of the year. Just an absolute blast. We all bonded. We were all screaming. We were all laughing. We walked outside. Everybody was like, yeah! And then we went to the parking lot of the hotel and drank. It was fantastic. Now, as a film itself, it's a beautifully made movie. It really is. It's an incredibly well-directed movie. I didn't have a problem with the build-up. I didn't have a problem with the explanation. I think it's a very clever movie, and I think there are a lot of surprises in it. Lots of surprises in it. And there are a lot of moments where at least the audience that I saw it with went, huh? There was a lot of, like, gasps during this movie. I think it's very, very funny, and I, you know, the kills are great. I think there are moments that are kind of scary where you jump a little bit. I don't think it's a particularly terrifying movie. You know, I mean, I still think, as far as home invasion movie goes, and which I have a phobia about, as you guys know, Them is the movie that just, I think, tops them all, the French film. But I think this is quality stuff. I loved every minute of it. I had a blast. I can't wait to see it again, and I think the next time I see this movie, I will probably either go to Bruin View or go to a midnight show on a Friday, since I'll have Friday nights off now. Go to a midnight show on a Friday with a group of people and just have a blast. I thought it was great. I really did. I loved it, and I highly, highly recommend it to horror film fans. Highly recommend it to horror film fans. And I loved everybody in it. You know, they're all very familiar faces in the low-budget world. This Sharni Vinson, I can't even explain how much I loved her performance in it. She kicked all kinds of ass. So there you go. And it opened. It's in like 8,000 theaters, right? I mean, it's all over the place.
Yeah, it's wide. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
That's great. I, you know, You know, here's a movie that it's been sitting on the shelf for a couple of years, and then it gets a really nice release, which I just think is great. Lionsgate did a great job with this, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great job. So, all right, well, we got one more movie to talk about, and yeah, it's pretty good. So hang on, everyone. Colin and Eric and I are going to come back and talk about a little movie called The World's End. Yes. Comments, questions? Did you see Your Next? Did you see any other movies? Did you see The World's End? We're going to take some phone calls from you guys. The Midnight Movie Reviews continue. Colin and Eric are with me. Phone lines are open. Call us up. Movie questions. Did you see The World's End? Your Next? Anything else that's out? 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here on the movie Midnight on the Voice of Chicago 720 WGN. We got the Midnight Movie Reviews that we're doing. And we're going to finish the Midnight Movie Reviews after the news coming up in a couple of minutes here on WGN. So we're going to talk about a couple of other things. Eric and Colin are here. And Colin and Eric, are you guys going to be able to make it to King Kong Tuesday?
I think so.
The 3rd?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, have you guys... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't see anything stopping me from this.
Awesome.
Definitely. Can't wait.
Have you guys ever seen King Kong on the original King Kong on the big screen?
Nope. Never have.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I saw it when I was a kid. My dad took me to see it when they kind of re-released it. I want to say it was the early 70s. And Marina City down here, Marina Towers, they used to have a movie theater in there. And that's where we saw it. We saw it at Marina City. I'll never forget it. It was fantastic. I had seen it already on television, you know, a couple of times. But to see it on the big screen, and we've got this is fully restored, and it's going to look fantastic. It's on Tuesday, September 3rd. And oddly, that night I will leave the King Kong screening and do my first official night from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. That's my first official night to do that, the overnight. So we're going to watch King Kong on the big screen. It is at the Movie Co. Theaters in Rosemont. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. Tuesday, September 3rd, we meet at 7 o'clock on the second floor of the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont at Bogart's. We'll have drinks and some food. Then we'll all go into the big, beautiful premiere theater with the unbelievable seats and the beautiful screen and digital projection, fully restored version. You can have cocktails during the movie. The movie will start at 8. We'll have a little talk afterwards. The original classic King Kong from 1933 on the big screen. So you can go to movieco.com right now and reserve your seats. Get there right now. You can reserve your own seats as we speak. So it's MUVICO, movieco.com, MUVICO. Go there now. You know, the tickets are going to start going fast. So reserve your seats so that they are there waiting for you when you get there. So, and again, it's Tuesday, September 3rd, 7 o'clock. We meet for drinks at Bogart's. The movie starts at 8, the classic version, original King Kong. Movieco.com. Make your reservations now. And Colin and Eric are going to be there, and we can hang out with those guys too. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Colin and Eric are here, and we've got one more movie to talk about. It's The World's End. That's coming up after the news, which is coming up after this. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, wrapping up the Midnight Movie Reviews. We got a late start tonight. We got one more movie to the review with Colin and Eric here. And Colin,
yep.
Why don't you tell us about The World's End?
All right. Well, this is the final in the Cornetto trilogy of Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, and Nick Frost, which was started by Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And in this, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost sort of play against type. Pegg is Gary King, a guy trapped in adolescence who wants to get his best buddies from his youth together for a pub crawl through a little English town called Newton Haven, I think.
Yep.
And it's going to be 12 pubs in one night, and the last pub is called The World's End. But Gary's friends have sort of grown up and have become responsible. But, you know, Gary is stuck in the early 90s and, you know, still plays mixtapes given to him, you know, 20 years ago in a car he bought 20 years ago. And, you know, but they reluctantly join him on this pub crawl anyway, even though one of them, played by Nick Frost, is kind of uptight and doesn't even drink. Now, this premise alone would make for a good movie. But something happens during the pub crawl that makes that sort of makes the people in the town seem not quite right. And I don't know about you guys. I feel like I shouldn't say anything more. I don't know. I don't know how far deeply we want to go, how much we want to tell people, because part of the joy of this movie is the way it builds up and reveals what the deal is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I haven't seen a trailer. I don't know what they're telling you.
There's a lot in the trailer.
Yeah. Okay. It's all there.
It's pretty much all there in the trailer, yeah.
Okay. Well, the people in the town are sort of victims of sort of like a, well, not, yeah, victims of kind of a, there's kind of a body snatchers thing going on in this town. Sort of body snatchers, sort of Westworld, sort of Stepford Wives, sort of Village of the Damned, that kind of thing going on. And the way they deal with this problem, I think, is one of the great joys of of just sitting and watching a movie I've had all year. Dealing with it by keep drinking. everything these guys do well, Wright and Peg and Nick Frost is on display here. You know, the hit the ground running intro, the running gags, really quick flashes of hilarity during the action sequences, which are among the best of the year. You could teach these movies, these three movies, in like a screenwriting class, especially to students who love genre films. And, you know, you could say, listen, if you can describe your genre film and make it sound interesting without even talking about the genre, then you're on to something. And these guys get that. The genre is just kind of incidental with these guys, whether it's zombie movies or cop movies or sci-fi paranoia movies. These guys just do it right. It's character and story first and everything else second or third. And it's one of the funniest films of the year. It's, I guess, some of the best action scenes of the year. Plot twists you will not see coming. This is a movie where you're going to like really get your money's worth with the admission price. So, I mean, you can't highly recommend this movie enough.
Yep. All right, Eric.
Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about these guys, going back to Shaun of the Dead. And, I think we all saw that coming, when we saw Shaun of the Dead, is that, this is a film that is as interesting and as funny before, the zombies show up. Colin's absolutely right that these films, would work on their own if they were continued down, sort of the path of the first act that they seem to be going down. But then they twist things up a bit, especially, Shaun of the Dead and this one in particular. It never loses focus of its first act. I mean, the idea that, you think of a movie like, say, like From Dusk Till Dawn, which, starts as a kidnapping thriller and then becomes a story about vampires. You can sort of, take that mold and apply it to The World's End, but The World's End has something even greater going on underneath its surface, while still being enormously funny, and the action sequences are kind of second to none. There's a bathroom brawl and there's a bar brawl that are just sort of, they're just extraordinary. They have you sort of wanting to revisit. I imagine, seeing this with a loaded theater, that there should be applause after the bathroom sequence. But going back to what I was saying is that this film, while really, being its own take on the body snatcher, deal and, all those sci-fi films that Colin mentioned, this is a film that is actually one of the most unique takes on alcoholism that I've ever seen. It's sort of amazing to me that they would take this path, and without even realizing it the first time through the pub crawl, that this is Gary King, whether he realizes it or not, whether he kind of self-initiated it or not, is really basically going through the 12 steps of rehab throughout this movie. I mean, the 12 steps, 12 pints, 12 pubs, It all fits. And if you know anything about the 12 steps, you can apply it to the sort of the experiences that they have going through each of these pubs. I mean, Colin's right. I mean, you go back to Shaun of the Dead again, you know, Nick Frost said, you know what we should do tomorrow? Keep drinking. And that's exactly what they go on. That's the best idea that they could possibly have, not to draw suspicion to themselves, is just to continue this pub crawl and just try and survive the night. And I just, you know, I love the fact that the fate of the world might be in the hands of one of the most, you know, hedonistic, you know, pieces of Arrested Development that we've seen in some time. Simon Pegg is tremendous in this movie, really great. And it's great to see Nick Frost not playing the buffoon role in a way. And he's terrific. Everyone is good in this movie. Eddie Marzan is becoming one of my favorite actors. Anyone who watches Ray Donovan on Showtime could barely recognize that this is the same guy in both of these projects. Martin Freeman and Patty Considine, Pierce Brosnan shows up in the movie. Yeah, this is one of the best movies of the summer. It's one of the best movies of the year. We're better off that these three films exist. And if you don't go support these movies, you know, shame on you.
Yeah. This might be the greatest movie that's ever been made. It's hard for me to even explain to you how much I adored this movie. I saw it tonight, packed house. There's the thing about all three of these movies, and they're, I mean, this is just a trilogy. This is, for me, you know, I mean, if you're counting this as a trilogy, screw all of them. This is like the best trilogy ever. It's the all three of these movies that they've made are actually about something. There's a theme to all of these movies. Most of the movies are about, you know, Arrested Development and refusal to grow up, refusal to accept responsibilities of any kind, especially in Shaun of the Dead. This is much more of a companion piece to Shaun of the Dead than it is to Hot Fuzz, although the same themes are in Hot Fuzz. This is the characters are so three-dimensional, and the way that the relationships between these guys is slowly revealed. Like, you don't know really what happened between Simon Pegg's character and Nick Frost's character until very late in the film. And that reveal is awesome. And it's a brilliantly written script. Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright wrote it. It's loaded with all kinds of references to other movies and in-jokes that, you know, that other people, you know, like the dorks will get. There's a swatch of the score. There's a variation on the They Live score at one point where where you kind of find out what's happening, like that there's, you know, you kind of see that everybody in the town is sort of like becoming these, you know, other beings. And there's like this throwback to the They Live score that shows up underneath for like about a minute at the most. And my ears perked up immediately. I'm like, oh, there's a They Live reference, you know. But the characters are so great. And again, Simon Pegg is amazing in this movie. I was moved by it at the end of the movie, just like in Shaun. You know, the whole thing about having to shoot his mom and all that stuff. That, you know, I got emotional about that. I cared about these guys, even though what was happening to them was completely and utterly ridiculous and would never happen. I believed everything that was happening on screen. Same thing here. And again, you guys mentioned the fight scenes. This to me is like the fight scenes in this movie are to me seem like an apology for the fight scenes in Scott Pilgrim, you know, because that whole movie is structured around fight scenes and they weren't good, and every fight scene in this movie kicks ass, and I was moved by it, and again I love the whole message of the movie, and you're right about the whole 12-step thing. I think that, you know, it's brilliant that they did that. They just continue drinking. The scene where there's a scene that involves Nick Frost in drinking. I don't want to give away what happens, but there's a particular scene that is just absolutely hilarious. There's also Nick Frost has an exit scene from one of the pubs where he puts his hand through. I swear to God, I was laughing for 15 minutes, and I'm not going to give anything away, but the big confrontation with the master control of this thing,
the network.
Oh my God. I don't know if I've laughed harder at anything all year. And they're complete. And by that point, they're all completely hammered. And the confrontation between that is just spectacular and so funny. He calls him a lamp at one point, and I don't even know. Listen, man. These guys are they're a national an international damn treasure.
That's right.
And these movies are phenomenal. They're three of the best movies of the last 10 years. You know, it's been 10 years since Shaun of the Dead came out, and these guys, I'm telling you, I love their work. If you liked Hot Fuzz and if you liked Shaun of the Dead, you're gonna. I think this might be the best of the three. I'll go back and forth on that. But my God, is this movie great and entertaining and funny and clever and three dimensional, and it does a great job, being faithful to the genre that they are, you know, satirizing. And yet, in what you guys both talked about, the first and foremost, these are three dimensional characters that you give a damn about. And in a movie that purports to just be sort of a parody or a satire of some sort of, you know, sci-fi or horror genre, to actually dig deep and get emotions out of it is an amazing accomplishment. And I loved every single frame of this movie, and so many great jokes and inside jokes and stuff. There's also sort of like a moment where there's also sort of a thing moment.
Yes.
They don't test each other's blood, but what they do while they're in that in that room, and then what Simon Pegg does.
Yes.
My God, there's not enough superlatives for me. This is my favorite movie of the year so far. That's it. This movie rules. It absolutely rules. And go see The World's End. That's all I'm saying. I'm doing a split shift tomorrow. I'm on from 6 to 7, and then I'm on after the Cub game. I'm going to be with Nell Minow from 6 to 7. Then I'm on. You know, then there's a Cub game, and then I'm back on again. Guess what I'm going to do tomorrow night after 7 o'clock?
Keep drinking.
Well, I'm going to go see The World's End.
Oh.
That's what I'm going to do, and then come back. I'm going to see it again. And
I've seen it twice. It's just as good the second time, maybe even better.
Yeah, I can't wait.
And Eric's right. I mean, you got to see it with a big crowd. I mean, the audience I saw it with last night, they were cheering after all the action scenes. You know.
Yeah.
This is the one.
It's,
you know,
just great. No, it's the deal, and it's, you know, it's August 23rd, and we found the best film of the summer. That's it.
Yeah,
you know, it took till the end of August to find the absolute best film of the summer.
Yeah, the summer ending on a great note between this, Your Neck, love a lot, and Drinking Buddies. Yeah. I mean, this people, your weekend is set.
It's a great weekend.
You have to go. You have to watch all these three movies. However you do it.
Yep.
Do it.
Absolutely. Three terrific movies. All right, next week, what do we got?
What we got next week? We got Getaway. We got another Ethan Hawke movie next week. We got the One Direction movie. I know you're looking forward to that. Yeah. Directed by Morgan Spurlock, of all people.
What?
Yeah. You didn't know that?
Oh, God. No, I didn't know that.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah. And you got Closed Circuit with Eric Bana and Rebecca Hall. And the Grandmaster, the Wong Kar-wai film.
That's right. Okay, so that's what we got next week. But this week, you guys should all go out and see, particularly Your Next, The World's End, Drinking Buddies. Three really great, great movies that, in fact, may end up on my list at the end of the year. All three of them. Solid year. Solid week. Really, really great week. All right, guys. We got one more week on Fridays, and then we're going to move everything to Saturday when I go full time. Okay.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
All right, you guys. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.
All right. Colin and Eric, help me out every week with the Midnight Movie Reviews. All right, we are going to come back, and we're going to do Drunks in the News, which is brought to you by the Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet. And then after 3 o'clock, we will do Straight Outta Context and Nick D Show Spies. That's all coming up right here on WGN.
Well, I ain't seen my baby since I don't know when.
Yes. You know what this means. It's time where we gather up all the stupid drunk stories of all the stupid drunk people doing stupid drunk things while they're stupid and drunk. We put them all together and we read them, and we call it Drunks in the News. Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We thank you, George, and everybody at Gale Street Inn for being so cool, being the greatest restaurant on the planet. Go to the Gale Street Inn in Jeff Park. Have a great meal, and we thank them for sponsoring the show. We do not have a drunk reader this week, but here's how it works. We're trying to set something up, and it fell through. So this is how it works. If you want to be a part of Drunks in the News, you get on the radio, you read a drunk story, and you get yourself a $50 gift card to the Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet. You find a link online to a funny drunk news story, and you send it to Craig and say, hey, Craig, I want to read this on the air. Craig will get back to you, record it, and then we put you on the air and you read it. So it's a win-win-win situation. You're on the radio, you read the drunk story, you're part of the bit, and you get a $50 gift card for the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. So find a link to a funny drunk story. Email it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. That's C-C-O-L-L-I-N-S. ccollins@wgnradio.com. And Craig will get a hold of it. He will get together, and you guys will record it and get on. So that's how it works. Find a funny link to a funny drunk story, and there you go. Let's do this right now. Oh, that's the wrong. What the hell happened there? That's the wrong. That's the wrong thing. Wait a minute. How did that happen? Let's try this. Let's try this, and that. All right, let's get going here for Drunks in the News. Here we go. All right.
I want to tell you a story.
Drunk number one. A drunk Louisiana man was arrested early Wednesday morning after he rode a horse into a saloon called Cowboys, lassoed an unsuspecting man outside, and then rode the horse around the parking lot, dragging the bound bar patron behind him. According to authorities in Scott, Louisiana, 26-year-old Jeremy Moten became highly intoxicated at Cowboys Saloon before leaving the bar, walking to his trailer and retrieving his horse. He proceeded to ride the horse into the bar, causing a major disturbance, said the police chief. He exited the bar and rode within the 200 block of North Ambassador before returning and entering the bar once more. Once inside the bar on horseback for a second time, a concerned patron attempted to escort him out and the horse out of the bar. Once outside, Moten wrapped the 47-year-old man with a lasso. Police were called at about 12:20 after the lassoing as Moten rode the horse back to his parents' nearby home and then walked back to the bar. He was located by officers shortly after he attempted to hide behind a newly manufactured trailer in the front of the bar. Authorities say that he threatened the arresting officer. He was booked on multiple counts of disturbing the peace remaining after being forbidden, second-degree battery, and public intimidation and retaliation. God. Drunk number two. I said, but I'm tired. An early morning crash was to blame for a portion of Route 23 being shut down on Friday morning. Police said an allegedly drunk driver crashed into a utility pole and brought down phone wires, resulting in the highway being closed around the scene of the crash until about 8 a.m. According to the police blotter, patrolman James Derricks responded to the area of Route 23 South on report of a one-car accident at approximately 1 a.m. At the scene, Derricks made contact with the driver of a 2013 Acura. The investigation revealed that the vehicle left the roadway, struck, and sheared off a utility pole, resulting in the closure of the entire Route 23 in both directions because of downed phone wires. One additional vehicle traveling northbound was damaged as a result of the phone wires being knocked down. There is no reported injuries. It remained closed for approximately 7 hours as Verizon made the necessary repairs. As a result of the investigation, Derricks arrested Claire E. Nordlander. She was subsequently charged with careless driving and driving while intoxicated. I'll tell the landlady, I
got a job. Drunk number three.
And then she was so nice. An Australian has escaped a prison sentence after being caught drunk driving at a McDonald's drive-thru on a motorized cooler. William Cropper's reported that He was at the drive-thru apparently drunk, driving a small four-wheeled vehicle that consisted of a 49cc engine and a large drink cooler. He pleaded guilty to drunk driving, told police that he had consumed at least 10 alcoholic beverages that day, including pineapple vodka, which was his favorite. His alcohol test revealed a blood alcohol level of 0.155. The vehicle had no lights, indicators, or reflectors, but Cropp's license was returned to him in the court when he appeared earlier in the week. He will serve a 2-year good behavior bond without conviction. He will also complete driver education programs and submit on illegality of driving such vehicles on public roads. Alrighty then.
Well, I ain't seen my baby since I don't know where.
Well, we didn't have a guest reader this week, so make sure you guys send your drunk stories to ccollins@wgnradio.com. ccollins@wgnradio.com. Send them your stories, and then you will be able to read one on the air. All right, we got a vote. We've got the drunk guy who knocked down a pole and knocked out a whole bunch of poles, telephone wires, and blocked off an entire highway. By the way, that took place in New Jersey. A drunk Louisiana man who rode into a bar on a horse and lassoed a man, or the drunk guy on the cooler going through the McDonald's drive-thru.
So I don't think it's the funniest story. I actually think it's the least funny, but it happened in New Jersey. How can I not vote for it?
Okay, you're voting for Jersey.
Absolutely.
And is George there?
Oh, well, I'm here.
All right, buddy, which one are you going for?
Vote for Jersey as well.
You're going for Jersey?
Nice!
Well, it's 2 out of 3, so that one wins. I voted for the guy who goes into the bar on the
right.
horse.
That's the funniest
and
story.
And lassoes the guy. All right, well, that's the winner this week. And again, find a link to a funny drunk story. Say, hey, Craig, I want to read it or on the air. You'll read it on the air. You'll get a $50 gift card to the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn, which sponsors this. Same time, same bat channel, same bat time next week for Drunks in the News.
Context.
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
Ah, yes. It is Nick DiGilio on the Voice of Chicago 720 WGN for Straight Out of Context. We are only going to do Straight Out of Context one more time on a Friday night. This is the second to last time we'll do it on a Friday night because we're going to bring it over to a Saturday night show. If you did not hear, I have gone full-time here at WGN. I am your overnight guy. Monday through Friday, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. every night. Plus, I will continue to do my Saturday evening show from 8 to midnight. And so we're going to take all the regular stuff that we did on Friday, because we're no longer going to have a Friday show. There's only one more Friday show, and that's next week. We're going to take all the stuff that we normally do on Friday, like Drunks in the News and the Midnight Movie Reviews and Straight Out of Context. We're going to move it all to Saturday, and we're going to do some of the regular things that we've been doing on Fridays and Saturdays over the last few years. We're going to take all that, combine it, the Friday and the Saturday shows that we do now, we're going to combine it to one big overstuffed Saturday show from 8 to midnight, and then I'll be your overnight guy full-time here at WGN from 2 to 5 a.m. We're going to open up the phone lines in a little bit and chat about all those changes, and if you want to call in and say hi, that'd be great. But right now, we got to do Straight Out of Context. All right, and this is how it works. You listen to this radio station 24/7, and when anyone says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. CCOLLINS. ccollins@wgnradio.com. You'll get the gist of what we're talking about here. So listen with a sharp ear 24/7 when someone says something that sounds dirty. Jot it down. Send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. All right. How many do we got?
We have 5 this week, and you're saying our Saturday show is going to be like a double-stuffed Oreo?
Yeah.
That what it is? It's a double-stuffed Nick D?
It's a double-stuffed Nick D. Yeah, you got it.
It's an out of context
right
there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here's Gus, and this is Gary Meyer.
Just as nice. I don't have to stick my fingers in any dirty holes.
God.
From Chris, this is Johnny B.
A-Rod got banged by Ryan Dempster.
You can hear that one again.
A-Rod got banged by Ryan Dempster.
That's a good one.
That is a disturbing image.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a good one. Okay.
Wild Bill, this is Gary.
They're going to have to learn how to do some squatting in 2 hours.
I know what that means.
I don't either.
Larry B., this is Steve Cochran.
When you go from one rack to another and the other rack is full... When you go from one rack to another and the other rack is full.
You know, I've not talked to my main man, Steve Cochran, about this bit. I don't know if he knows about it. But
He seems like he might be in it a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll make sure he's aware. Make sure he's aware. And we'll get many from Mr. Steve Cochran, who is back here doing mornings. And who, by the way, I'm going to be doing 2 to 5 every morning on the weekdays, and after 5, I'm going to be hanging out with Cochran and helping him out during the first part of his show too. So we're going to be spending a significant amount of time with Steve Cochran during the beginning of his show after 5 a.m. too, and that's going to happen every morning. Okay, and we got one more.
Yeah, this is the last one, and actually it parallels exactly what you just said. That was Steve Cochran. This is you, Nick, and this is from Wild Bill.
I would not take any meat from that animal.
I don't know why.
I would not take any meat from that animal.
That doesn't sound good.
I mean, I'm trying to remember what we were talking about because it's all getting blurry now. and it's going to continue. By the way, you know, my shift Monday through Friday, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. every morning, your overnight guy. That shift, the 2 to 5, doesn't technically begin until after September 3rd, but I am in all of next week again, midnight to 6.
Are you going to keep saying you're filling in for Bill Leff?
No, I'm not. I stopped saying that yesterday.
Oh, nice. Okay, good.
Because Bill is now on, he's on in the morning. So right. He'll be on, well, this coming week, he's on from 10 a.m. to 2. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, 10 a.m. to noon. He's on 10 a.m. to noon. And then his official show starts on September 3rd, like all of the official shows right. start. He will now be 9 a.m. to noon. But, yeah, I'm still doing, like, straight through. This is going to be the longest stretch. You know what? Do you know when my next day off is?
It would be Friday night the
6th. It's 2 weeks from tonight.
Yeah.
Is going to be my first night off.
Right.
Since, like, almost two weeks ago. So
right.
It's almost a full month of fill-ins that I've been
wow.
doing. Including my regular Friday and Saturday. So the next day that I have off will be the 6th of that Friday night.
What's the record for most radio days?
I don't know. I have no idea. And then, but now I'm working 6 nights a week. So I'm only going to have one night off a week, and that's Friday night. So I'm working 6 nights a week, and I couldn't be happier, man. You know, I'm loving it. But yeah, I'm getting a little loopy, and it's going to be really crazy because, you know, that's a long shift. That's one of the deals. That's why the shift is split up. Management, in their wisdom and very smartly, said that there are not going to be any shows longer than 4 hours you want to keep everybody fresh. You want to keep the energy going. You want to keep things happening. So they're splitting. You know, the overnight shift has historically been very long here at WGN. You know, 11 to 5, 11 to 5:30, 12 to 6. You know, it's been very, very long. And sometimes, you know, like Eddie Schwartz would do it by himself. Steve and Johnny would do it. And then, you know, Bill Leff would do it. And it's a long, long shift. And so they're splitting it up, and justifiably so. So I got the latter part leading into – I'm your leadoff man for the morning drive, baby. That's my job. My job now on WGN is I am the leadoff man for morning drive, and I could not be more thrilled. So from 2 to 5 a.m., and so that's why the overnight shift is shorter now, and I'm happy to do it. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of good times. But, so I don't have a day off until September 6th. So, you know, if you like me on the radio, I'm on a lot until September 6th. So, and this week coming up, this week it's midnight to 6. So it's a full 6 hours starting Sunday night into Monday morning. So there you go. All righty then. Yeah, that's Straight Outta Context. So F-bomb. So you know how that works. That's when you listen 24/7. Somebody says something dirty and it sounds funny when you pull it out of context. Again, jot down the day, the time, who said it. Send it to ccollins at wgnradio.com.
Straight out of context, context, context,
all right.
Context, context.
Like us.
All right. Nick D. Show Spies. This is how this one works. You know, these are all audience participation things and contacting Craig via email to be a part of it. If you want to be a Nick D Show spy, listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever I am mentioned or the show is mentioned in any capacity by anybody on this station, you're my spy. We want to know what people are saying about me in the show. So jot down the time and who said it and all that good stuff. And again, send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. How many spies do we have?
We have just one this week.
Okay.
This was sent in by so many people almost immediately upon it happening.
Okay.
And then I think I'm still getting them right now.
Okay.
But it is Steve Cochran talking about you.
All right.
And Nick DiGilio is officially a 25-year overnight sensation. After 25 years, he was discovered by Roy Leonard when Nick was, what, seven?
Yeah, and it only took him 25 short years.
25 short years, that's
very,
all.
Very well deserved.
I called Nick last night to congratulate him because Nick will do 2 to 5 a.m. Monday through Friday. And he's like a kid in a candy store. He couldn't be more thrilled.
Oh, he's so
and
sweet.
I'm thrilled that he's going to be on.
And we are, I mean, collectively, I think there was a noise ordinance that was broken this week with all the whooping.
Wow, that's nice. There was a noise ordinance with all the whooping. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, there you go. That's how the spies like us work, the Nick D Show spies. Yeah, so listen 24/7 when anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity. Jot down the day, the time, who said it. Send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. Find a funny drunk story that you want to read on the air. Send it to ccollins@wgn.com. Somebody says something dirty out of context. You send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com.
Spies like us makes me laugh so hard.
There you go. All right. That's how it works. That's the participation part. We've got one more Friday night with these regular bits, and then they're going to move over to Saturday night since we're not going to be doing a Friday night show.